This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk.
Hi, I'm here with Dave Paul from Zork. How are you, Dave?
Mate, I'm great.
We've actually had Zork on there. We had John Brooks on the show about a couple of years ago, actually.
Yeah.
Talking about your Zork closure, but you've got a new closure now. What's the story there?
We have. You would have interviewed John at the time we'd launched our still wine closure.
Yep.
And we've developed a really innovative closure for sparkling wine.
Okay. What is it?
Well, it's based on the same concept as Zork, that there's a tear band. So you tear a band and then you simply lift, it pops, you could click it and it reseals. So it's bringing convenience into the hands of consumers.
Okay, the tear band, same sort of thing, so people know if it's been tampered with?
Exactly, it's a tamper evidence band.
Yeah.
That's right.
I'm trying to open one up and let's have a wee listen to it.
Sure, we'll do. New. Yeah. So here I'm just tearing the band off. That's the pop. That's the click. Resale.
I like the reseal.
You know, all the research we've done around the world, reseal is actually a really important factor because the trend in sparkling wine is to enjoy it every day, a glass every day.
Yep.
And moving a little more toward the consumption away from celebratory. Of course, celebratory is important with sparkling wine, but everyone enjoys a glass of sparkling every day.
Yeah,
so be able to reseal it in the closure itself and put it back in the fridge for later or tomorrow with a different friend is really convenient. It's good.
Sparkling wine, happy drink. So
it's a happy drink. And if there's no pop, there's no fun.
Well, I don't know. I was taught not to pop the fizz. I was taught it had to sound like a nun's fart. Fud is more the word you're looking for than a...
And that's probably the case. To the average consumer, they want to hear that pop.
Yeah, no, it's true. I as a student, I used to shake my bottle of Spumante up and fire the cork as far away as I could. It was good
now,
fun.
You're the type of guy that we're trying to avoid. We're trying to avoid people hurting themselves with those things that come out of the bottle.
Okay, so let's just talk about the closure. The original Zork, the big thing was it had an aluminium disc wedged between two bits of plastic.
That's correct, and that's also the same concept here. The critical factor is that we wanted to maintain a very high level of carbon dioxide retention in the product over years. And a very good way to achieve that is just as screw cap does with a foil. We use the same foil they do in a screw cap, and CO2 doesn't escape.
Yep.
So it does a little bit, but it's not dramatic. In fact, it's exceeding where the wine makers anticipate cork to be over time.
Okay, so the big one was oxygen ingress. You had a small bit of plastic that the oxygen could effectively get through that plastic.
Correct, and that's important in sparkling wine as well. You do want bottle development. Particularly, it does add some really interesting characters. There's not very much oxygen ingress, and it's very, very small, obviously, because the CO2 is such a dominant gas within the headspace. But, you know, all the sensory trials we've done around the world, you can't pick between cork and Zork when it comes to sparkling wine.
What was the reason for developing it? Because cork taint with sparkling wine, I've had the odd corked bottle from sparkling wine, but nowhere near as bad as still wine. So I'm not sure why. Maybe they use better quality corks. Not quite sure exactly the reasons for that. But cork taint in sparkling is a lot less for me anyway than for stills.
You're right, but cork taint is only one of the issues, and there are a couple of factors to it. They do use a much larger cork in sparkling wine, and secondly, because it's carbonated, then it changes the detection of TCA on the palate. So TCA itself isn't as much a critical factor as simple things like convenience, being able to reseal, being able to remove easily. Unfortunately, with cork and the wire muselet, once you remove that wire muselet, you've got a missile ready to go off at any time.
Yep.
And people do get a lot of eye injuries. You know, there's a lot of claims from major wineries around the world, you know, that they have claimed for liability.
So, really?
Oh, yeah.
And the winery gets dicked for the bill?
Absolutely. It's not something that they advertise, but it's certainly a factor. Yeah. But, you know, in their defence, no one knows when a cork's going to eject from the bottle. The great thing about this is that it's in your hand and it won't move until you actually lift up the seal. When you lift the seal, it'll come off in your hand. So you can't injure yourself.
So let's have a look at this seal. Can I just open it up
Absolutely.
Here?
Absolutely.
Let me just see if I can...
Put it off. Here you go.
All right, so it's made up of two parts, isn't it? Is it two parts?
It's technically four parts. It has an outer cap.
Yep.
It has an inner collet, and the collet have little fingers that grip around the top of the bottle.
Yep.
And then there's the internal foil, and then there's a seal, which is specially designed for a positive seal inside the core of the bottle.
Okay, all right. So there's the sweet gold thing. Is it always going to be gold in your product?
No, you can, because it's plastic, and have it absolutely any colour you want.
All right. Yeah. Well, there's in our one, there's a wee gold thing that's got the wee hooks on it, and that goes on the top.
That's correct.
It pushes over the lip of the bottle.
That's right, the crown seal of the bottle.
Is that a normal?
Yes, it is. We designed this to fit a standard bottle. There are three standard bottle finishes around the world, and we've designed this to fit each one.
Oh, I didn't know there was three different bottle finishes.
Oh, there's a few more than that, but
yeah, okay. There's three of the main ones. So that clips over there, and then when you
press it down,
that's pushing those wee hooks under the hook of the glass. Really,
that's correct.
Under the lid of the glass.
And once the cap is down, which you're going to do now. Once the cap is down, those little hooks can't come out, so they're locked in.
Yep, yep.
And so that will now go to full pressure. In fact, it takes 12 bar, 1,200 kPa.
Yep.
And you won't get a champagne even at 12 bar, maybe 10, but not 12.
Yeah, I've got a carver that I taste regularly, and it's fairly is lethal. All right. So can you get it off with one finger? Can you get it off? Yep, you can.
There you go. And, of course, the same on reverse. Now, the great thing is that you can leave this in your kitchen drawer after you finish this bottle and use it on another bottle. You know where it's really...
That's because I pay a lot for champagne stoppers. I've got a load of champagne stoppers.
Which leak gas very easily.
Do they?
Mm, over a period of time, absolutely.
Is this better than a champagne stopper?
Oh, yeah, because it's got the foil internally.
They've got plastic. But to be honest, champagne stoppers and me, they're...
Well, you know where it makes
24 hours is like the longest that they'd go.
That's true. But if you're on premise, if you're running a restaurant or a bar, and you have a house sparkling, you want that sparkling to have gas, not just today or tomorrow, but maybe 3 or 4 days' time. And the beauty of this is that you will have gas 3 or 4 days' time. So you won't lose as much if you're in a restaurant or bar. In fact, one of the major wineries in Australia is looking at it just for that reason.
Is there a way of gassing this up? Because one of the things is that as the bottle level drops, you've got to lose more carbon dioxide out of the wine to get the pressure up so that the carbon dioxide doesn't come out of the wine. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, of course. Of course.
So if you've got a third of a bottle, it's not going to help you that much, is it?
Because it's temperature related. So if it's the cooler it is, the less gas escapes into the headspace. So, you know, if it's really cool, it'll maintain a good deal of gas pressure.
Okay, I have had bottles of fizz where I've opened them up, left them on the side, come back to them sort of 12, 20 hours later, and they've still been quite fizzy.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, just because you open a bottle of sparkling, it doesn't mean it loses all of its gas.
Okay. So who do you think are the main markets for this product?
Well, you know, globally, the largest market is Europe. So we're in the process of strategically releasing Zork in the European market.
And the UK is one of the biggest consumers of fizz.
UK. You know,
we are the biggest consumer importer.
And the great thing about the UK is that they've moved forward in terms of screw cap. Screw cap broke all the rules in terms of tradition. In some ways, sparkling wine, champagne in particular, have been very, very traditional. What we've found in markets like Australia is that because everyone enjoys a glass of sparkling on a daily basis, that you know, moving away toward the tradition, the tradition of sparkling into more everyday consumption will mean that convenience is very important. And the UK consumer understands convenience. Screwcap delivers it. Zork delivers it as well.
Okay. All right. No, it sounds good. I actually quite like it as an idea. I did like the Zork as well, but I still haven't seen a lot of Zorks around in the UK market. How is the still wine closure going?
Well, it's got its feet in the ground, definitely in markets within Europe and also the US, particularly the US. But, you know, there's a lot of different products for still wine. There are very, very few products for sparkling wine. And so this Zork will actually accelerate in terms of take-up because of a number of factors. But we actually do have a lot of brands, but mostly in the US market and through Europe.
How does the product compete on price? Because the Zork, the original Zork, was an expensive closure by plastic cork closure standards. Mainly, I imagine, because it's, you know, three parts, it's got to be welded together, all that sort of stuff. So how does this compete on price? Do you have a sort of a general price point for this?
Sure we do, yeah. But let me come back to the standard Zork, you know, the standard, the still wine Zork. You know, there are lots of different motor cars on the road. You don't necessarily buy the cheapest. Some deliver better value and better benefits as you get more expensive. This one actually delivers, the sparkling wine closure delivers a lot of benefit. And from a winemaker's perspective, it's really easy because it's just simply push it on with existing equipment. You don't have to put a cork in, and there's problems with cork. If it dries out, it smashes bottles, and you don't have to put the wire on, so it's very efficient. So your efficiency will pick up. We're launching this on the market for about the same price as Cork and Muselet, so no one's disadvantaged. The big advantage from the winery's perspective is because it's a really modern package, you can leave it without the traditional foil hood. And of course, there's cost savings with that.
Although the foil hood was added by dodgy champagne producers to hide how much was in the bottle.
Well, it's actually tamper evidence.
It is tamper evidence now as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
But you can never get a normal cork back in there. So.
Well, that's exactly right. But you know, the foil has become a traditional mark of sparkling wine. Not so much in Australia. Australia, they're certainly in the popular price category, is moving away from foil into a more avant-garde, a more modern label yep. style. And you'll see that trend globally. I was in Germany last week, saw the same trend happening in Prosecco. Very modern labels now, aiming at a different consumer set than they were 5 and 10 years ago. Oh, the other thing is, that of course, that it's 100% recyclable.
Is it? Even with it, by separating the aluminium from the plastic?
Some areas need it separated and they can separate it. Most of them don't.
Really?
Mm-hmm. It's a recycle code 4. So, it's covered within the general plastics and materials generally.
Even though the aluminium's there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, some markets in the world require separation, others don't.
Okay, that's interesting. I know my local council are rubbish with recycling plastic. They're good with glass, mm-hmm. but they're rubbish with plastic, so... All right. Excellent. All right, then, Dave, I will wrap it up there. Thank you very much for your time.
Excellent. Thank you very much.